Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Getting It Done, and I am your host, Dr. Walter Dean. You know, I was talking to somebody today, and they told me, "Geez, what kind of show are you going to do?" And initially, I was going to do a show on giants in this country. Actually, giants all over the world. At one time, there were giants on our planet Earth. But the show, really, to me, was boring, so I decided to do something else. Yes, slavery has been over in this country for almost 200 years. However, why are we still treating black people so poorly in this country? Let's look at some real poor treatment that maybe you have not even given any consideration to. Let's start here.
This is Levittown, Pennsylvania, a new suburban community of 60,000 people midway between Philadelphia and Trenton, New Jersey. With its giant shopping center, winding lanes named for flowers and trees, it is fairly typical of communities all over America, where families are pursuing the American dream to give their children a better chance in life. Levittowners are people of modest means. Nearly all are young people. A large proportion are veterans. There are a few social agencies, and while many religious groups have established churches, they've not yet had time enough to develop programs to adequately serve the community. Most Levittowners are proud and happy in their new environment. For many, it is the first house of their own, and it represents a major financial investment. Social life is mainly confined to visits with the neighbors. Occasionally, there are community-wide events, but it's too early yet for most residents to become identified with the broader aspects of community living. Levittown was built by one man for whom it is named. Like many community developers, he set the initial policy and provided a minimum of essential services. When the houses were sold, naturally, he waited to its own slender resources. In August 1957, Levittown, Pennsylvania, attracted international attention when violence erupted as William Myers, Jr., and his family moved into the three-bedroom house at Daffodil and Deep Green Lanes. In almost all respects, the Myers family is close to the Levittown norm. They have three small children, the youngest only 1 month old. Myers served for 2.5 years in the Army and was discharged as a staff sergeant. He works as a laboratory technician and is studying for a degree as an electrical engineer. His wife, Daisy, is a college graduate. The Myers home is modestly furnished, and their late model family car was bought on time. They are very close to the Levittown norm, except in one respect. William Myers, Jr. and his family are Negroes in an all-white community. Levittown reacted in a number of ways to the new arrival. There were several hundred who congregated on the street in front of the Myers house, and there were those among them who felt strongly enough to throw a rock through the picture window. But there was another large group who were repelled by this kind of behavior and organized to help Levittown accept its first Negro neighbors. The vast majority of Levittowners went peacefully about their daily activities, but in the stores and at the schools and on the front lawns, Levittowners discussed the Myers.
Well, I first read a small article in the newspaper that the first colored family had moved into this community. And following that, I began to hear on the radio and read in the newspaper that there was some disturbance around this home that these people had bought.
What was your initial reaction?
I was terribly shocked to find that there were people in this community who would be so violently opposed to it. I rather thought that everyone would just accept it as I would.
Was the community prepared in any way for the entrance of the first Negro family into all-white Levittown?
Well, there was an attempt by a group of ministers who formed a group called the Human Relations Council, and they were just getting started on their work. I don't know how they expected to ultimately accomplish the purpose of educating everyone, but I know that they had an open forum one time, and just within the last 3 or 4 months, and the results of it were published in the paper.
Do you feel it was effective?
No, I'm afraid it was just a drop in the bucket. Not very many people even read or were aware of the article or of the meeting that preceded it.
Although there had been little interest in the formation of the Human Relations Council some weeks before, the Myers became the main topic of conversation for the people of Levittown within a few hours of their arrival. In the absence of fact and authoritative information on a situation like this, rumor and gossip sweep through the community. As the stories pass from one person to another, because hardly anybody knows the truth, what everybody has said becomes the fact.
Oh, I heard lots of rumors. I was busy telling people not to believe them.
What kind?
Well, that they'd been sponsored chiefly. I think people resented, after they heard this rumor and believed it, they resented feeling that some outside group had deliberately moved these people in. That they were sponsored and paid by an outside group to do this very thing. And I had been told on good authority that that wasn't true at all, and so I told people that it wasn't true.
Do you feel that understanding the facts of the situation will help?
Oh, yes, I do. I'm sure that a more reasonable attitude is going to prevail in this community, and I have great faith in the people here and that they'll soon find out there's nothing to be afraid of.
Some view the incident calmly and indicate acceptance of the fact. But for others, the Myers moving into Levittown constitutes an infringement of their own liberties. And under the impact of this situation, they react with anger and force. What they say reveals their deepest fears and frustrations. Why did you select Levittown to live?
We were looking for a place to buy a home. We looked at Levittown, and we liked the homes here. We liked the advantages that Levittown seemed to offer in comparison to other cities. And we understood that it was going to be all right. We were very happy to buy a home here.
How about your children? Have you talked with them about the Myers?
We have tried to keep the discussions away from the children. I feel that it's something that we adults should solve without bringing the children into it any more than we have to. We're doing it for the children, but I don't feel that they are old enough to understand the problem as it is.
Do you think a Negro family moving here will affect the community as a whole?
Definitely.
In what way?
I think that, well, the property values will immediately go down if they are allowed to move in here in any numbers.
Can you give a basis for that judgment?
Yes, we used to live in Washington, D.C., and we saw a very good example of that there.
A repetition of an experience that was distasteful. Is there to be no escape from living near Negroes? And what of the dream of middle-class respectability? If a Negro family can afford what you can afford, how do you justify your feeling of superiority? The illogic of one's own position becomes apparent. And in self-justification, the old tribal myths are invoked. What other objections, aside from the effect on property values, do you have against the Myers?
The whole thing centers around the word integration. Well, as Mr. Myers said, because his home has been anything but peaceful since he moved in. He's got 3 children. And evidently, he feels that they will be accepted socially. And I don't feel that they ever will be. But the whole trouble with this integration business is that in the end, it probably will end up with mixing socially. And you will have, well, I think their aim is mixed marriages and becoming equal with the whites. But the only way they're going to do that is by education and by bettering themselves, not by pushing in the way they have here.
Do you intend to move?
At the time, no. It's a pretty impossible situation. We have our home here, and if the colored move in and run real estate values down, there are a lot of us, the GIs particularly, who are going to be more or less with their homes.
As the lines are drawn, those on either side become more adamant. Tension develops and feeds on suspicion and mistrust. What has been the effect of the Myers coming here?
Well, it's created a great deal of tension, not among the neighbors, because we all feel the same. But it's naturally made everyone tense in their homes. I mean, this is affecting our homes, and it's bound to create tension. It's the subject that's talked about all the time.
But there are others who are for the Myers?
Yes, I've read about them.
For what reason, do you think, do they support the Myers?
Frankly, I don't know what reasons they can have for it. If there are homeowners in Levittown, I don't see what reasons they can have for it.
Do you think Myers will be able to live here comfortably?
Comfortably? No.
What course of action are you going to follow?
I'll do what I can to help to get them out legally and peacefully. And as far as accepting them socially, if that's what you mean, I could never do that.
To take sides in such a situation is more than a matter of one's own conscience. What a man believes becomes a subject for community debate. For those who believe a man has the right to live anywhere he wishes, the answers are simple and straightforward. Has this affected your relationship with neighbors?
No, we've discussed it freely. We found people for and against, but we've tried to keep it being discussed. That was the important thing.
Have you heard any rumors?
Many. I won't repeat them because I don't like to repeat rumors, and I don't think it's fair to keep them alive.
Do you think rumors contributed to the reaction of those opposing the Myers?
Surely they did, but we had some very interested citizens here who pledged themselves to a fact-finding group, and they tried to dissolve those rumors as quickly as they were started by fact.
Do you think the Myers will be able to live comfortably in Levittown?
I hope so. I think the majority of people here will grow accustomed to it and realize that they can be good neighbors, which I'm sure they are. And I think the majority of people here are not the violent group that we have heard so much about.
Do you think the Myers staying in Levittown will affect property values?
I don't think that the Myers have anything to do with the property decreasing or increasing. I think it's purely a white problem, not a Negro problem.
In what way?
I think it is the feeling of the majority group which will influence the property, not the minority group.
Those who want an integrated community take their stand based on their own deep feelings of what a community should be. Do you feel that the Myers will lead to large numbers of other Negroes coming here?
No, I don't think so. I think that there will be probably a normal entrance and not a deluge. I mean, people who want these homes will come here. It's not what people say that influx. There won't be any such thing. There'll be a normal, I hope, because I would like to see an integrated group here, and I would like to see my child, and I hope my children go to and live in a group that is representative of the world, and not being an integrated group, it is not now a representative of society. Of course, we've all discussed this, and we've all said that the answer to the problem is eventually when you find that there are no more areas to which a white person can move without having a Negro family in. Well, that would be the best end that there could be to segregation, and it is probably something that will happen in the future, perhaps in the near future.
For some, the answer is tremendously complicated, tied up in a maze of past associations and present influences. Sometimes opinions are expressed with grave misgivings and a sense of guilt. The past slips through despite what is said. Being for Myers can be difficult if one's background rejects this decision.
Some of the people are definitely against integration. And they have told my children that they have to marry niggers. And my child doesn't even know what a nigger is, but from the sound, it has scared them, and they have come home just crying. Mommy, do I have to marry niggers? And my answer in handling all the fears that children come in is that you can marry whomever you wish.
By the way, we both seem to be from below the Mason and Dixon line. Where are you from?
I come from Kentucky.
Had you known any Negroes before you came to Levittown?
My father had a business in an area where there were several colored people. And I can honestly say one of my best friends was a colored girl. And as children have no prejudice, we became very close friends. And in her later years, she has become a registered nurse and trying very hard to raise her children in a clean atmosphere. And we have talked now since we both have been married, and it's such a disadvantage to see her children try to grow up healthy in the atmosphere that they have to live in.
A personal relationship and sympathy with a Negro who is trying to improve her circumstances seems to make a difference.
I have found several colored people that I have enjoyed their friendship. I would not let that determine whether I become friends with them by the color of their skin.
Have you heard any rumors?
I had heard several rumors, of which that I have just taken as rumors go. But the one that bothered me most was the fact that the Myers family has moved in to several all-white sections and trying to be the first colored family to move in to start the other ones to come in, that they have done this before. Now, I believe that if they do come here to cause trouble, then I'm against what they're doing, their principle. But if they're just trying to find a better place to live and to bring up their children, then I'm for them.
There are those who live in Levittown who like it and intend to stay. They have no intention of according the same privilege to the Myers. Some of them find it more comfortable to talk in a group. You're aware that a Negro family has moved into Levittown?
Yes, I heard about it.
What was your reaction?
Dynamite. Dynamite.
What have you done about it?
Well, I guess we just discussed it.
Feel about the Myers moving in?
Oh, I'm very definitely against it.
Before coming to Levittown, did you have any contact with Negroes?
Well, I came from a small town where we didn't have any colored people. And at that time, I had no feelings either way. But while we were waiting for our house to be built, we lived in Trenton for 9 months. And, that was my first contact with them, both in work and going through colored sections to work. And I was very happy I was moving into an all-white community.
Have you ever discussed the Myers at home with your children?
Never before in our house was anything mentioned, pro or con, about colored people, because I feel that they have to be in contact with them to a certain extent, and why should their minds be prejudiced? But since they have moved here, they have heard remarks, and I'm afraid that they are going to dislike the idea. There were colored children in the school my son attended last year for the first time, and he often came home and said there had been trouble between them during the day at school.
It becomes convenient to exaggerate one's own fears and to help a neighbor increase hers.
My boy, he likes sports, and he used to go down there every Saturday with two of the boys from the neighborhood. And there was an argument that occurred, something real silly. My boy and a colored boy got in an argument. Well, from that time on, for the whole remainder of the summer, the boy was afraid to get down there because the colored boys got a gang together. And every time they would get near my Jimmy, they would beat the devil out of him. I went to the principal and everything about it.
A major factor is fear. Fear of economic loss, loss of status, fear of violence, and fear of intermarriage. Do you think other Negro families will come to Levittown?
Definitely.
Yes.
What do you think will happen?
Well, just what's happening already. I don't know. It's a rumor I read in the paper where they have two colored school teachers now in Levittown. So that's just a good example of what is going to happen.
Well, what's wrong with that?
I do not like. I have two daughters and two sons. And if there's too many colored people around here, I definitely will get out. I'm not thinking much. Well, I don't want her associating with colored people, period.
Well, I'm very definitely against mixed marriages, and that's eventually what it's going to come to. If children are raised together, they're not going to think of anything of marrying together.
Well, I just could not live beside them. I don't feel that they should be oppressed. But I moved here. One of the main reasons was because it was a white community. And that's the only place I intend to live. If I have to leave Levittown, I will do so.
For some Levittowners, the basic issues involved had nothing to do with intermarriage or property values, loss of status, fear of crime, neighborhood decline, or being in the minority. They saw it as a test of democracy. What was your reaction to the Myers moving in?
Well, I was happy to see this become more of an American community.
There seems to be a large group opposed to the Myers. What would be your attitude toward them?
Well, I would divide. I don't know if there are large groups of people opposed to the Myers. After all, we have some, I don't know, I guess close to 60,000 people in Levittown. Those mobs are never more than 500 or 600. And I think if you'd gone down to the shopping center any night, at the time the mobs were here, you would have seen 10,000 people at the shopping center while those who were violently opposed to Myers moving in were engaging in what they were engaging in.
You don't think, then, that a large majority is against Myers moving in?
Well, that's not true offhand. I know some of the immediate neighbors right here who were for the Myers moving in. I wouldn't hazard a guess of what the proportion of that welcomes the Myers and how. And what proportion is opposed to it, but I don't think that's the main issue involved in this case anyway.
What is the main issue?
The main issue is the right of these people to live like America as they choose, but to be accepted as good neighbors.
What are you going to do about it?
I'm going to try to be a good neighbor.
Do you feel that the Myers coming to Levittown will lead to large numbers of other Negroes coming here?
I don't know.
Do you think the Myers will be able to live here comfortably?
I think it'll take a little time, but they will eventually.
Have you heard any rumors about the Myers?
Oh, dozens and dozens of rumors.
What kind?
Oh, that he was being paid by the NAACP, that the Reds were behind it, that the Jews were behind it, that this group and that group was behind it. There were all kinds of rumors. I guess some of them were being spread deliberately. Some were just a result of hysteria. There was all kinds of malicious rumors. Some of them were so ridiculous you couldn't see how people could accept them, but in the atmosphere, some people did accept them and spread them.
What course do you think the future of Levittown will take?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't think Levittown's an island. It's part of the USA, and I think it's going to integrate like the rest of this country is going to integrate.
In Levittown, as elsewhere in America, there are those who believe that the rights and privileges of citizenship belong to all, regardless of their race or color or creed. And there are those who believe in equality, too, but in a somewhat more limited sense.
In my business, whoever's got money and has good credit or wants to pay cash can buy a car. It has no discrimination, color, religion, or any type of that sort.
Has the coming of the Myers affected your home life?
Personally, my home life, it hasn't affected nothing whatsoever, but on the neighbors, they have a right, because the average white person living in Levittown has 4 and 5 children. Well, let's put it this way. If the Levittown is migrated in hordes of Negroes, which they have a right to come here. But if something that happens that way, pretty soon my neighbor will be having a Negro son-in-law or a daughter-in-law. How would that look?
Wasn't Myers the Bill of Rights as a citizen to move wherever he pleased?
Well, let's put it this way. Mr. Myers and all the Negroes have right. I'm no better than them. They're as good as I am. They can go anywhere they want. I mean, they have a God-given rights in there. And being a good American, they have the rights to the civil rights. They have the right to pursuit of happiness. But by the same token, we have mixed communities, and it's a proven fact that those mixed communities are over a third empty. He could have stayed there. He had a beautiful home there. The only reason that Mr. Myers came into Levittown is to show people they could get here. It wasn't that he wanted to come to Levittown, but my personal opinion is this. There is something bigger behind this.
Is that your personal opinion only, or is it a fact?
No, I say it's a fact, and I would tell anybody. I mean, barring nobody, I would tell them in a meeting, including the gentleman that is the head of this committee for bringing Mr. Myers here, I'd tell him.
When did you first hear of Myers moving in?
I heard about Mr. Montana. I was having coffee in a restaurant where he worked as a utility man, dishwasher, I don't know. It was supposed to be a part-time job, but I've seen him there at 7 in the morning till 9 at night. And then the paper says he was an engineer.
Where did you hear it?
That's where I heard it, from the waitresses in there. They asked me, did you see your new neighbors? And I didn't care to discuss it in public.
What did you do?
I didn't do anything.
There you have it. An American community caught suddenly in a moment of crisis. Neighbor set against neighbor, as they differ on what should be done about one Negro and his family who have come to share with them the American dream of a better way of life for their children. Many seem convinced that property values must decline when a community or a neighborhood becomes integrated. But studies which have been made prove the opposite to be true. Property values go up, provided there's no wave of panic selling. And even when there is panic, after the situation is stabilized, prices climb back and frequently go even higher than they were when the initial sale to a Negro was made. Does the integration of Negroes into a white community result in a higher rate of crime, violence, or juvenile delinquency? Not at all. Negroes living in predominantly white communities show a lower incidence of crime than the average for the general population. Is intermarriage the ultimate goal of Negroes in seeking to integrate into previously white communities? The studies show that of all the reasons Negroes have for seeking equality of opportunity, intermarriage is the least, and of all the fears that whites express, this is the greatest. Negroes seek only the right to buy or rent the kind of housing on the open market which they can afford. This basic principle of the free enterprise system, of which we're justly proud, is now denied to them in many communities. The exclusion of Negroes from white communities and their restriction to all Negro neighborhoods fixes negative ideas about them, which are carried over from generation to generation. These false notions cause the abandonment by the white population of large areas within our great cities at a tremendous cost to the nation. Aided by a prosperous post-war economy, Negroes have held fast to their wartime gains and have sought to improve their lot in life. Advances against discrimination have been made in many fields. A new and much larger Negro middle class has grown up, able, ambitious, and confident. These families are determined to leave the old, densely packed, segregated neighborhoods, and they're economically able to do it. They have the money to buy their way out of the slums. What happened in Levittown is merely the beginning of what is to follow in communities all over the country during the next few years, as Negroes, like all other Americans, get better education, better jobs, and accumulate more savings. Can we prepare our communities to receive these new neighbors in dignity and peace? Or will we wreck our communities with violence and abandon them in panic? This is the challenge posed for us as Levittowners sum it up for themselves.
I don't think you can take a middle of the stand here. Either you're for them or against them.
I've taken a stand for peace and nonviolence and no intimidation of the Myerses. I don't have any prejudice against colored, just that I wouldn't like to have one as a neighbor.
We would act to them as we'd act to any other neighbors. We would be friendly towards them and speak to them and visit with them.
I wouldn't care to live in the community where the Negroes would be living.
I think that the majority of people here will accept things and believe, as I believe, that a good neighbor is not one whose color is white or black, just as a good citizen as such.
Mr. Myers and all the Negroes have right. I'm no better than them. They're as good as I am. But the only reason that Mr. Myers came into Levittown is to show people they could get here.
I just feel that they're within their legal rights to move in here. And if they move in, they're law-abiding citizens. I have no complaints.
If more colored are allowed to move in, Levittown is going to go downhill.
I don't think that the Myers have anything to do with the property decreasing or increasing. I think it's purely a white problem, not a Negro problem.
The main issue is the right of these people to live like America as they choose, to be accepted as good neighbors.
That was recorded in 1957. 1957. And here we are in the year 2020, where we're moving back to that particular attitude, or have already gone back to that particular attitude, on the treatment of white people and all these other different ethnic groups have come to this country and have not had to go through what black people have had to go through. For some strange reason, this ends up being a problem that goes from every time you turn around, there's something going on in the treatment of African Americans. In just a minute, we're going to look at my family was one of the first blacks to move into the neighborhood where we lived in the 1950s. So this is what happens when they when black people moved in. And in fact, during the 1950s, where I lived, we couldn't even move into a white neighborhood. It wasn't until the mid to the late 60s that we were able to move out of where we were. Let's go on and listen to this documentary in the 1960s.
Well-known dancer teaches a class in modern techniques. Here is a journalist who works for one of the many Negro-owned newspapers. More and more Negroes are becoming salesmen. For instance, this man sells cars. Here is a nursemaid. A bank teller. A draftsman. A machinist. A welder. A diplomat. In a Park Avenue skyscraper, the vice president of a major corporation. To show you how many of us live, I'd like you to meet some friends of mine who live out in Brooklyn. This is Walter Beltrop. Sometimes on a Saturday night, if they can get a babysitter, Walter and I take our wives bowling. As you can imagine, Walter's a powerful bowler. He practically throws the ball down to the pin. Walter's wife, Wanda, used to be a secretary. But Walter is a top-notch social worker. He works in a community center with young people. Tony's the oldest child. She already attends nursery school. She's 3 years old and has a great personality. This is Saturday morning. This is the morning that Walter always tries to help out around the house. Many American men like to do a little work around the house. Even I like to wash the dishes now and then. On this morning, Walter is going to help with the breakfast. His specialty is pancakes. Wanda thinks that Walter's pancakes are a little too crisp, but she tries to humor him. But Tony finds them very tasty. I'd like you to meet another family here in Brooklyn, the Smiths. Marvin Sr. is a parole officer. This is a very festive day, a very special day. Their two sons, aged 9 and 7, are excited as they await the arrival of the grandparents. Today is Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving dinner is one of the great American customs. It's the day when families get together. On this day, it just wouldn't be right without a turkey. It's been a long day for Mrs. Smith, who was expecting a third child. Father says grace. And this is the important thing about Thanksgiving: to give thanks for the blessings of the year.
To me, Thanksgiving is a day for you. Home day. Can we have a lovely home and then take somebody out to dinner on Thanksgiving Day? No, something missing.
In another part of town, at an old folks' center, people of another generation are celebrating Thanksgiving too. Harlem has always had the reputation of being a place of music, gaiety, and excitement. But to us, it has another meaning. Here, only Negroes live. How did this come about? The Negro was brought from Africa to be sold into slavery. A century ago, slavery was abolished. But a pattern of segregation took its place. Although there have been significant changes, we are still deprived in many instances of full rights and opportunities. For example, there are hospitals in which the surgeons we saw earlier are not allowed to practice. And in some states, we are still restricted by signs like these. Later in this film, we shall see some of the ways in which the situation is changing. But first, let us ask a cross-section of Negroes how segregation affects their lives.
Segregation to the average Negro means being held back. He's looking for progress. He wants to move forward in the American mainstream. Segregation holds him back.
I think it's something that's ridiculous. You take the white people in the South that are not only in the South, anywhere, that refuse to allow a Negro man or a Negro woman to sit in a restaurant or to ride next to them in a bus or a train or anything. And then on the other hand, turns around and wants a colored woman to come into their home and cook their food and serve them their dinner after having their hands all in their food. I think somebody's got to be crazy there.
Up to this present time, it hasn't affected me at all. As far as my work and my social activities, up until this present time, I can say it hasn't affected me.
In order to understand how any Negro feels under segregation, you have to realize that from the time of infancy, he has it pounded into him that he's not as good as other people. There are things he cannot do. Don't do this, you can't do this, you can't do the other. It builds into a man a feeling of inferiority, a feeling of frustration, a feeling of resentment.
So much bitterness built up in a person and resentment when you know that you're being segregated against simply because you're black and there's nothing that you can do about it. There is something you're trying to do about it. But
these students are typical of many throughout the country both Negro and white, who have been effective in breaking the barriers of segregation. Sense the confidence and dedication of these young people as they discuss their plans.
Talking about there's the possibility of spending your Christmas in jail. I think the most beautiful thing we could do would be to stage a mass sit-in or some type of demonstration. And if they did not serve us, to remain until they served us. If arrested, to go in jail and refuse bail. That's what I think will have a much larger impact than just your arrest. I'd like to hear your comments on it and see exactly what you think and how you feel about it. Tony?
We've been getting public sympathy, but not enough by just going in and coming out. And if we decide to spend Christmas in jail, then I'll go.
How many people would actually, you know, committed enough right now that if the time to us, they would spend their time in jail over Christmas holidays?
Through the years, Negroes have always protested against segregation. But what you see here is an example of a new spirit.
In 1956, Negroes in Montgomery, Alabama, have come to the end of their patience with segregation. They refused any longer to sit in the back of traffic. And in silent protest, came to walk until all public transportation was desegregated. By this simple act, they received the imagination of millions of Americans. The man who came to symbolize this movement and to give it a philosophy is the Reverend Martin Luther King. He preached nonviolence as the means for Negroes to attain their rights. These were the principles of Mahatma Gandhi. Nonviolence proved successful, and the Duchess of Montgomery were the subject of one of the most dramatic applications of the principles of nonviolence came with the Freedom Rally. These were organized by the candidates of racial equality. These members, both Negro and white, determined to challenge the practice of providing separate facilities for Negro and white travelers in the South. From all over the country, mixed groups traveling by bus into the South. There were segregated waiting rooms and restaurants in many southern cities. In some, they were arrested, but they were determined to succeed even if it meant going to jail. Negroes were jailed for entering white waiting rooms. Whites were jailed for entering Negro waiting rooms. Over 200 freedom riders went to jail. Nearly half of those were white. Nearly half were women. Once again, the principles of nonviolence proved their effectiveness. For an evaluation of the Freedom Rides, we asked James Farmer, National Director of the Congress of Racial Equality.
Rarely in American history has anything been so successful as the Freedom Riders in the attack upon segregation. Before the Freedom Rides began, most of the bus terminals were segregated, especially in the Deep South. But as a result of the Freedom Rides, the Interstate Commerce Commission issued a ruling which went into effect on November 1st, ordering that all the segregation signs must come down in the terminals and that in their place must be posted desegregation signs.
How is it that these events had not taken place earlier? We asked Roy Wilkins, Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Well, of course, for many years, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and the declarations therein were on the side of minorities and individual freedom, but the enforcement of the law was not. However, over the years, the Supreme Court has handed down a number of decisions in voting rights, matter of service on juries, and housing, and in education, which have given the federal government the power to proceed. Now, these decisions were won largely, but not exclusively, by NAACP attorneys. With the legal framework now firmly in hand, the federal government is free to proceed and act to enforce the rights of its citizens.
Shortly after the war, President Truman ordered segregation to be ended in the armed forces. However, because of the nature of our Constitution, the president cannot just do away with segregation by a stroke of the pen, but through the actions of the federal government, state governments, organizations, and individuals, progress has been made in a number of areas. Let's have a look at three of these: voting, housing, and education. First, voting. Here is Robert Kennedy, the Attorney General, speaking to the press on this question.
We have found a pattern of discrimination in some sections of the United States, which have used literacy tests to deprive really tens of thousands of our citizens the right to vote because of their color. This legislation will rectify that situation.
Ralph Metcalf, a Chicago alderman, on the Negro's power as a voter.
Well, I would say that the power of the Negro voter is increasing by each election, because the Negro now is becoming more aware of his position in the electoral field as a result of many of the things that are happening today. And I think he's been being more discriminating in his voting. He's being acutely aware of those candidates who he thinks will espouse his own cause and therefore votes in larger numbers now.
In some cases, the Negro's vote is crucial and often carries the balance of power. As a result, more and more Negroes are running for political office in the United States.
The Constitution stands for, and we as taxpayers demand. I'm delighted to be on what I think is one of the finest tickets that's been offered to our state for many years.
Progress in voting has been reflected in other areas. Let's take a look at housing. In this Chicago suburb, Negroes and whites live side by side. But for many Negroes, housing remains a problem. Whitney Young, National Director of the Urban League, discusses this.
So many Negroes do live in substandard housing, some housing, dilapidated housing, and it does affect the whole family constellation. It's hard to keep a husband and children in an overcrowded housing situation. It is no secret that in this country there is a disproportionate number of Negro citizens who are on the welfare rolls, a certain amount of total social participation.
There have been many Negroes who live in substandard housing. There has been a tremendous movement into better homes.
To facilitate this, several states have passed laws prohibiting discrimination in housing. And recently, the president signed an order prohibiting discrimination in housing built with federal support.
For most Negroes, the most important progress has been in the field of education. This is Little Rock, Arkansas, 1957, when Negro students encountered violence in their attempt to register at a previously all-white school. Traditionally in the South, schools had been segregated. So it is not surprising that there was opposition when the Supreme Court ordered schools to integrate. But violence could not be tolerated. President Eisenhower ordered in federal troops to support the rights of the Negro student. To the eyes of the world, the fact of violence tended to obscure the true meaning of Little Rock. Its importance was that it demonstrated to those who opposed integration that they would ultimately have to give way. Negroes' rights would be upheld by the federal government. Eventually, these students were admitted, educated, and graduated. Today in Little Rock, this school is peacefully integrated. Year by year, integration of schools has proceeded, but there have been some holdouts. One of these was the University of Mississippi. In 1962, the Little Rock story was repeated there, when President Kennedy sent in federal troops to ensure of James Meredith's right to enroll and to pursue his studies.
In many areas of our country, schools have never been segregated. For example, I went to integrated schools all my life. This is one of the high schools in the part of the country where I spent my youth, Indiana. Here, the students come to school at 7 in the morning. Already, the basketball team is practicing. The team is composed of both Negroes and whites.
He kicked it out. It's Green's ball, boys. Let's get hustled down. That's the way to handle it, Willie. Gray a little tighter defensively. Get up on him. Move it. Move it. Swing it around. Somebody got to get on Tom. Get out there. Help. Help, Ben. Help.
We asked the principal to tell us about his school.
In this school, we have about
10% of Negro students. Now, we have no problem, really, racially at Washington, and I think principally because the students are very clever and very able in handling their problems. There is no conflict. It's a completely integrated school insofar as school activities are concerned, both curricular activities and extracurricular. Find the people completely mixed and working without reference to color. The administrative policy and the teachers' activities, the students' point of view, sees no color. We treat everyone insofar as possible as an individual and on the basis of his own merits.
William Forrest teaches social studies. We asked him whether his students discuss race relations freely with him.
Very easily. In fact, this is probably one of their main concerns. Many times, they see something in the paper or in a magazine, they all ask me, well, how do you feel about this, and what's your impression, and what are the real circumstances behind these situations? Sometimes we step on a few toes, and I think we have to, some basic beliefs and concepts that probably mom or dad or a grandparent had, and perhaps they even believe it themselves until they get involved in a situation where the facts are put forth and they can realize for themselves that perhaps mom and dad have been wrong. I think this is a really true building step toward better race relationships.
As you have seen, although we in America have some way to go in improving race relations, we have already come a long way. How do we Negroes feel about ourselves and our country?
I think that much of the change in the Negro's feeling about himself has been brought about as a result of the newly developed countries of Africa. I think that many of us are very proud now of our African heritage. I think black has come to be something that we're all quite proud of.
I say America because this is the only country that I know. It's the country that I have fought in wars to defend because of principles I believe, and because it provides me the opportunity to fight for the things I believe in.
The vast majority of Negroes feel this way, that there is nothing wrong with the United States or our democracy that we can't correct. There is always that hope, that strong feeling that we can correct the situation. If we can pull a few of these knuckleheads together and bump their heads and make them understand that this is what was meant as the American ideal.
This is my home. And though in many instances it has caused me pain, I am first of all an American. I think that there are many indications of extreme tension which produce hostility. The Meredith case at the University of Mississippi is probably the best example of this. It's been a long time since we've had anything that was this violent, this upsetting. But I think that this is because, on the whole, things are improving. But moreover, everybody knows that things have to improve.
By and large, the 20 million Negroes in the United States work and play just as any other American does. Of course, the pursuit of equal rights is uppermost in all our minds. We know that the responsibility of being an American is part of that pursuit. But in terms of everyday living, what we basically enjoy is pretty much what every American enjoys. The long and heroic struggle of Negro and white alike against the evils of race prejudice is one of the greatest epics in our nation's history. It has brought the American Negro to real heights of heroism and splendid achievement. We have broken many shackles and won our way to the front lines of our national, artistic, athletic, and intellectual endeavor. We have become a vital factor in industry, agriculture, and are a decisive force in our general political life. We have truly, in the United States, come a long way, but we still have a good way to go.
You are
Yes, you're correct. The first thing that I showed, or at least let you hear, was dated back in 1957. This particular presentation occurred in 1967, 10 years later. The same kind of discussion that took place was more updated in the late 1960s, after the killing of Martin Luther King and after the killing of John F. Kennedy and his brother. And for the most part, even Martin Luther King's brother was killed in the swimming pool. For some reason, they found him dead in the swimming pool, and his mother and father, all of them were killed. And that's that. All those people who were at that particular time, in the midst of trying to make America be what it was supposed to be, and we had moved by that time to a much better place. Although, as was stated, we have a long way to go, which is true. That was true then, as it is today, because we've slid so far back. Yes, we had a black male president of the United States. And after we had that, we had somebody who came in and tried to destroy all of that and move us back to where we're back in the 1957s. And so it's very, very difficult to feel that progress is going forward. Progress is going backwards, and until we get some people in the office, and the highest office in this country, who are really all about race relations and making it possible for people of color and people who are white to really function together, I don't think people really realize how great this country could really truly be. Yes, we've made some progress, but there's so much more progress that can be made. And just think about it, if we were all working together, we would be the envy of every country in the world, because they would know that because we are working together as brothers and sisters, that we will accomplish much more than we are accomplishing as we go backwards in a train that's going back into another planet. We should be moving forward, and moving forward to the degree where all people are treated with the same level of respect and equal treatment. This has been Getting It Done, and I have been your host, Dr. Walter Dean. Once again, thank you for listening, and hopefully I will be able to present another show to you on Friday of this week. Take care and have a great week, people. Be safe. Bye-bye.